Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're diving into a book that, well, it tries to do something pretty audacious and basically answer every big question about existence in one go.
Yeah, it's a big one. We're talking about Bill Bryson's A Short History of Nearly Everything.
And it's so much more than just a list of science facts, isn't it?
No, absolutely. Bryson tapped into that feeling we all have, you know? That sort of deep question, how did we actually get here?
Right, and maybe even more, how do we figure any of this stuff out?
Mm-hmm.
Like the Earth's age or atoms or the Big Bang. I mean, where do you even start?
Exactly. Mm. And he turns all that complex history, all those intellectual puddles into this, well, this single really gripping adventure story. It's brilliant.
And I think the sheer scope is why it feels so relevant now. You know, we get so much specialized information thrown at us all the time.
Mm.
But Bryson sort of gives us the big picture, the unified theory of us, almost.
It really does instill this amazing sense of wonder, like almost profound. And it makes all this crucial science stuff feel, well, accessible.
Yeah, vital even for understanding our place, you know, our tiny little precious place in the cosmos.
So if you're looking for that shortcut, that way to feel clued in about the universe's history, this is definitely the deep dive for you.
Okay, but first, let's talk about the man himself, Bill Bryson.
Yeah.
Who is he?
Well, he was born back in Iowa in 1951. And most people probably know him from his travel writing, right? Like Notes from a Small Island or A Walk in the Woods. Very funny stuff.
Exactly. Which is what makes his book so unexpected and frankly so brilliant. Bryson's not a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Not a physicist or geologist or anything like that.
Nope. His background is journalism, storytelling. He even says quite openly that science in school just baffled him.
Uh-huh. And that outsider status, that's actually his secret weapon here, isn't it?
Totally. It's his superpower. He basically acts as our standing, the reader's proxy. He's the one asking the simple questions.
The ones we might feel a bit embarrassed to ask.
Yeah, the really profound but kind of basic ones, like, hang on, why is most stuff empty space? Or how on earth did someone first measure how far away the sun is? He translates it all.
Okay, but hang on. If he's just asking the simple questions, how do we trust the complex answers he gives, especially in a book covering, 13.8 billion years? That feels like a risk.
That's a fair point. But that's where the sheer dedication comes in. This wasn't something he just dashed off. No, no way. He spent 3 solid years just researching, talking to hundreds of experts across pretty much every scientific field you can think of.
Wow. Cosmology, anthropology, the whole lot.
The whole lot. Just to make sure everything was accurate, you know. Rigorously checked, but still told in an engaging way. He basically did all the heavy lifting for us.
Okay, so let's talk about the book itself then, this massive structure.
Mm.
What does A History of Nearly Everything actually cover?
Well, the scope is just, it's staggering. It's this incredibly ambitious attempt to explain how our scientific understanding developed across everything.
Starts at the very beginning.
Right from the Big Bang. And it takes us all the way through, right up to, well, us. The very recent arrival of humans on the scene.
And it's chronological, mostly.
Right.
From the cosmos down to the cell.
Yeah, but the real genius, I think, is that the focus isn't just on the timeline. It's the history of the ideas. That's what makes it so different from a textbook.
Okay. So less about the facts themselves and more about how we got them.
Exactly. It's the human drama behind it all. Bryson is fascinated by the people, the personalities, the often bitter rivalries.
Like the Bone Wars.
Oh, yeah. The Cope and Marsh fossil feud. Classic example. And the mistakes people made, the lucky breaks, the sheer stubbornness that led to breakthroughs.
So it shows science as, like, messy and human.
Totally. Often bureaucratic, highly personal. He doesn't sanitize it. You see the whole messy process.
Which makes it feel much more relatable, I guess, even if you actively avoided physics in school.
Right. It assumes you don't have any prior knowledge, uses really clear language, great analogies. It just hooks you in, even on the really complex stuff.
Okay, let's dive into the story itself then. Starting big, right? Cosmos and deep time.
Yep. Part one is Lost in the Cosmos, dealing with the Big Bang. And the real shocker isn't just how big the universe is. It's how recently we figured that out. Most of the key stuff, the universe expanding, cosmic background radiation that was discovered, like within living memory for many people.
Wow. So we haven't known about the big picture for very long at all.
Not really. And that sense of huge scale, it leads straight into part two, the age of the Earth, what scientists call deep time.
Because for ages, people thought the Earth was just, what, a few thousand years old?
Right, that was the standard belief. Mm-hmm. Then you get figures like James Hutton, Charles Lyell. They started looking at the rocks.
And realized things happen slowly.
Exactly. Erosion, mountains forming, these things take vast amounts of time. Almost unimaginable stretches. If you see a huge canyon carved by a tiny stream.
And it took way longer than a few thousand years.
Precisely. Billions, not thousands. And that huge shift in thinking, that understanding of deep time, was absolutely essential for Darwin's ideas about evolution later on.
Okay, so from the incredibly huge, let's pivot to the incredibly tiny. Part three gets into atoms and weird physics.
Yeah, the sort of dawn of a new age in physics and chemistry. Think Dmitri Mendeleev and the periodic table.
Ah, okay. Organizing the elements.
But it was more than just organizing. His table was so powerful conceptually that it actually predicted elements that hadn't even been discovered yet.
Really? Like it left gaps for them?
Yeah, and predicted their properties. It's just this amazing example of science's predictive power.
Wow.
But sometimes that revolutionary science comes at a real human cost, and you see that so clearly with Marie Curie.
Her work with radioactivity.
Mm-hmm. Her dedication just fundamentally changed physics, medicine. But she worked without safety gear. Back then, they didn't know.
And it affected her health.
Yeah, it almost certainly contributed to her early death. It's quite sobering, you know, a reminder that discovery sometimes involves real sacrifice.
And then we get down to the atoms themselves, which, as Bryson explains, leads us into the really strange world of quantum mechanics.
Mm.
He has to tackle things like the uncertainty principle. How does he make that understandable?
Well, he basically says that, you know, as you go deeper and deeper into the atom, the rules we're used to in our everyday world just stop working.
They break down.
Pretty much. The uncertainty principle, in simple terms, means you can know where a particle is or you can know how fast it's moving, but you can't nail down both at the same exact time.
Huh, that's weird.
It is. The universe at that level runs on probability, randomness. It's just much, much stranger than our common sense wants it to be.
Okay, so moving from the subatomic to the catastrophic, parts 4 and V are about Earth being a pretty violent place and about life itself.
Yeah, he makes it really clear our planet isn't some nice stable home. It's a dynamic, frankly terrifying rock sometimes.
Plate tectonics, right. The continents moving around.
That's the engine, yeah. But also the constant threat of huge disasters. Things like the supervolcano under Yellowstone.
Which is still active.
Oh, yeah. Or asteroid impacts from space, like the Tunguska event in Siberia, or the Chicxulub impact, the one that wiped out the dinosaurs. These aren't just theories. They actually happened.
It really drives home how fragile life is.
Yeah.
And in the origin of life itself, Bryson emphasizes that it's still this huge mystery, right?
Oh, absolutely. The sheer, almost unbelievable luck involved in getting from just chemistry, non-living stuff, to the very first self-copying cell. It's staggering.
And then things took off. The Cambrian explosion.
Yeah, but even then, what really stands out is that mass extinction isn't the exception. It's kind of the rule in Earth's history.
The Great Dying.
Exactly. The Permian extinction wiped out something like 96% of all marine species.
Yeah.
96%.
That's almost everything.
It's terrifying. And it really puts our current existence into perspective. Mm. How narrow and incredibly precious this little window of habitability is.
Which, I guess, finally brings us to part 6. The road to us. Humans.
Right. And when you stack up human history against cosmic time, or even just geological time, we're incredibly recent arrivals.
Like the last few seconds on a 24-hour clock representing Earth's history.
Something like that, yeah. It's a tiny sliver of time. And the path to us, to Homo sapiens, it wasn't some straight line, some inevitable march of progress.
Wow.
Not at all. The fossil record, thanks to people like the Leakeys, shows this bushy, branching tree of evolution. Loads of different human-like species, most of which were evolutionary dead ends.
There were just one branch that happened to make it.
Pretty much. We're just one twig, the lucky survivors, really.
And this whole epic journey, right from the Big Bang, through stars forming, planets cooling, life starting evolution, it all leads to right here, right now.
Mm-hmm. And that puts the spotlight firmly on our responsibility, doesn't it?
How saying?
Well, we're apparently the first species on this planet capable of understanding our own story, our cosmic origins, and crucially, understanding our impact on this very fragile world.
Okay, that realization seems like a good place to transition into the key themes he pulls out.
Definitely. And the first one, the one that echoes throughout the entire book, is just the mind-blowing improbability of existence.
He really is staggering when he lays it all out. everything had to be just right. The distance from the sun, the planet's rotation speed, the exact values of physical laws.
Cosmic good fortune at every single turn. An almost impossible sequence of lucky breaks.
And the reflection from that is, well, it's got to be gratitude.
Profound gratitude, yeah. We should just be amazed by how precious this narrow window is. The fact that we're even here to talk about it is practically a miracle against incredible odds.
Okay, theme number two. Science as a messy human endeavor. We touched on this, but it's central.
Absolutely. Progress isn't neat or linear. It's full of those rivalries, like the Bone Wars we mentioned.
Right.
And full of ideas that got shot down at first, like Alfred Wegener's theory of continental drift. People thought he was nuts for decades.
So it humanizes science. Shows it's not just equations and labs.
Completely. It shows that being wrong is okay. It's part of how science works. And that sheer persistence, just sticking with an idea, is often just as important as being brilliant.
Encourages a bit of intellectual humility, maybe. Patience.
Yeah, exactly. Real breakthroughs take time and often involve a lot of fumbling around in the dark.
And the third big theme.
The interconnectedness of all things. Bryson is brilliant at showing how you can't really understand one field of science without the others.
Like needing radioactivity to figure out the Earth's age.
Perfect example. Which then helped confirm Darwin's long timescales for evolution. Chemistry underpins biology, physics underpins chemistry. It's all linked.
And that culminates in that famous idea that we're made of star stuff.
Literally, every single atom in your body, heavier than hydrogen and helium, was forged inside a star that exploded billions of years ago.
Wow.
So we're not just observers looking at the universe. We are physically, fundamentally part of the cosmic story we're trying to piece together.
The book is just packed with lines like that, isn't it? These perspective-shifting nuggets that just stick with you.
Oh, completely. It really changes how you see everyday things.
Okay, let's share maybe three of the most memorable ones. The first one you mentioned about our cosmic heritage. He says something like, every atom you possess has almost certainly passed through several stars and been part of millions of organisms on its way to becoming you.
Yeah. Just think about that. The carbon in your breakfast this morning might have been part of a T-Rex or floated in a nebula light years away before that.
It's the ultimate connection, isn't it? Grounds you in time and space in this really profound way. Like matter is just constantly recycled.
Okay, the second one is about life itself. He has this line, it's slightly arresting, he says. If you took yourself apart, atom by atom, you would produce a mound of fine atomic dust, none of which had ever been alive, but all of which had once been you.
Whoa. Okay, that messes with your head a bit.
Right. It forces you to see that life isn't some magic property of the atoms. It's the incredibly complex organization, the pattern they make, that self-sustaining system. That's what life is.
The pattern is the point. Not the pieces.
Exactly. And finally, maybe the most personal one, the sheer staggering improbability of you specifically existing.
How does he put that?
He basically lists all the things that could have gone wrong for your ancestors. He says, not one of your pertinent ancestors was squashed, devoured, drowned, starved, or deflected from its life's quest.
All the way back.
In order to eventually result in you. An unbroken chain of success, of survival, stretching back billions of years.
Billions. That's just impossible to really grasp. You read that and it's hard not to feel kind of unique, kind of miraculous.
Totally. Survivor of everything the universe could throw at life.
So, okay, we've got this huge mind-expanding perspective. How do we actually, you know, apply this monumental knowledge in our normal day-to-day lives?
Well, the first practical thing is just better scientific literacy, right? Having this foundational understanding helps you make sense of current issues.
Like climate change.
Yeah.
Or debates about genetics. Or space travel.
Exactly. It gives you the context to engage critically, to participate in those important societal discussions in an informed way.
And it may be less practically, but just as importantly.
Yeah.
It cultivates wonder.
Oh, absolutely. It encourages curiosity. When you grasp even a fraction of the complexity behind, say, taking a breath or seeing a star.
You stop taking it for granted.
Right. The ordinary becomes extraordinary. It's like the ultimate cure for just shrugging things off or feeling jaded.
And there's also that story of Claire Patterson, the guy who figured out the Earth's age accurately.
Yeah, his story is amazing because in doing that work, figuring out the age using lead isotopes.
He discovered massive lead pollution.
Widespread lead contamination. Yeah, mostly from leaded gasoline. And he didn't just publish his findings. He spent decades fighting the incredibly powerful lead industry.
Wow. That took guts.
immense courage. He basically saved millions from lead poisoning. His story is this incredible case study in scientific integrity.
So the lesson there is, knowledge brings responsibility.
Absolutely. It's about standing up for the truth, even when it's inconvenient or unpopular. That applies way beyond science in any profession, really.
Okay, final takeaways then. What's the one thing that really sticks with you from this whole journey?
For me, I think it's the realization that science is still happening. It's an ongoing process. The book tells us so much about what we know, but it also highlights how much we still don't know.
Like what dark energy is, or exactly how life first sparked.
Precisely. And that's exciting, right? It encourages you to keep learning, keep asking questions, knowing that huge discoveries could be just around the corner. It fuels that lifelong curiosity. What about you?
I think for me, it circles back to that sense of privilege. The most valuable lesson, maybe, is just how incredibly fortunate we are to exist at all.
That improbability again.
Yeah. And given that we're the species that's aware of it all, that can contemplate our place. Well, that should inspire both, like you said, profound wonder, but also a really deep sense of responsibility.
Responsibility to protect the very conditions that allowed us to be here in the first place.
Exactly. Wonder and responsibility. Seems like a good place to leave it.
Agreed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker. Another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.